All right, welcome in everyone to the deep dive. We're going to be taking a look today at a pretty impactful case, Omnicare Inc. v. NCS Healthcare Inc. And this is one of those cases that if you're at all into corporate law, especially those of you who are just starting out in law school and really looking to dive deep into M&A, you really got to know this one. It's huge. It's really changed the way a lot of deals are done. Luckily, I have an expert here to help us kind of unpack everything that happened.
Yeah, so I mean, I think what makes Omnicare such a pivotal case is it really forces everyone to think about the tension, right, between getting a deal done and the responsibilities, the fiduciary duties that a board has to its shareholders. And Omnicare really kind of tests those limits. How far can you go to kind of lock up a deal?
So let's back up for a sec, though, and can you just paint a picture of what was going on with NCS Healthcare at the time? Like, what led to all of this legal drama?
Sure, yeah. NCS Healthcare was, they were really struggling financially and looking for a buyer. They actually ended up reaching a merger agreement with Genesis Health Ventures. However, as we'll see, this was not a straightforward merger. There were some pretty heavy deal protection measures built in, three in particular, that are at the core of the Omnicare case.
Okay, so let's get into the weeds of those deal protections a little bit. Can you tell us what exactly those three measures were?
All right, so the first was an exclusivity clause. It basically meant that once NCS signed with Genesis, they were like locked in. Couldn't shop around, couldn't even have discussions with other potential buyers.
So, no looking for a better deal, even if one was out there. And what was the second one?
The second was a biggie. It involved voting agreements with two NCS insiders. So we're talking John Alcolt, the chairman, and Kevin Shaw, the president and CEO. Together, these guys controlled more than 65% of NCS's shares, and they agreed, contractually, to vote their shares in favor of the Genesis merger.
So that's like a huge chunk of the voting power, pretty much guaranteeing the deal would go through, right?
Yeah, exactly. Even if every other shareholder voted against it, Genesis still had enough votes to push the merger through.
Wow. So what was the third measure?
The third one was what we call a force the vote clause. And this basically meant that even if for some reason the NCS board had second thoughts about the Genesis deal, maybe they found a better offer, they were still obligated to hold a shareholder vote on the Genesis merger.
Let me just repeat that back to make sure I get this. NCS couldn't talk to any other potential buyers. Over 65% of the shareholder vote was already predetermined, and no matter what, there had to be a shareholder vote on the Genesis deal. So yeah, as you said, those are some pretty strong deal protection measures. But then things got even more interesting, because that's when Omnicare comes onto the scene, right?
Absolutely. So after all this is in place, Omnicare comes along and makes a much better offer for NCS, significantly better financially. And you can imagine the NCS board kind of freaking out at this point. They knew the Omnicare offer was better for their shareholders, but they felt like their hands were tied because of those deal protections they had signed.
So this is where the big legal question comes in, right? Did the NCS board, by agreeing to these deal protections, did they breach their fiduciary duties to their shareholders?
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. And the Delaware Supreme Court, they ultimately sided with Omnicare and said that, yeah, those deal protection measures were invalid. They called them preclusive and coercive.
Okay, preclusive and coercive. Those sound like some pretty serious legal terms. Can you just break those down a little bit for our listeners who might be new to corporate law? What exactly did the court mean by those words?
Sure. So by preclusive, they basically meant that the way these deal protections were structured, it made it, as they said, mathematically impossible for any other offer, including the one from Omnicare, to actually succeed. With over 65% of the votes locked up for Genesis, no competing bid really stood a chance.
So basically, it wasn't just that they made it difficult for a better offer to win, they actually made it impossible. And what about coercive?
Well, coercive refers to the fact that because of those deal protections, the shareholders were like forced into approving the Genesis merger, even if a better option came along. It created this, fait accompli situation. Even if the NCS board realized that the Omnicare deal was a much better option, the shareholders were still probably going to end up approving the Genesis deal because of how everything was locked in. The court basically saw this as taking away the shareholders' ability to actually choose what was best for them.
Now, there's another important part of this case. There's this thing called a fiduciary out clause, which was missing from the NCS Genesis deal. Can you tell us what a fiduciary out clause is and why it was so important in the court's decision?
So a fiduciary out clause is basically like a safety valve. It's common in merger agreements, and it gives the board of directors the option to terminate the agreement. Usually, you know, this would be if a better offer came along and they felt like accepting that offer was necessary to fulfill their duties to their shareholders. But in the NCS and Genesis deal, this clause was nowhere to be found. The NCS board had basically boxed themselves into a corner and couldn't back out even if they wanted to.
So when we talk about fiduciary duty in this situation, what does that actually mean? What are these duties that the board has to their shareholders?
Yeah, that's a good question. It basically comes down to two main duties: the duty of care and the duty of loyalty. Duty of care means, you know, making informed decisions, doing your homework. And the duty of loyalty means putting the best interests of the corporation and the shareholders first, even above your own personal interests. And when a company is being sold, this often means getting the best possible price for the shareholders.
And the court was really unhappy that there wasn't a fiduciary out clause in this case, right? They seemed to think that this was a big mistake on the part of the NCS board.
Yeah, absolutely. The court was very clear that a board always has to act in the best interest of the company and the shareholders, especially when the company's being sold. They basically said that you can't just sign away those duties in a contract. And in this case, because there wasn't a fiduciary out clause, the NCS board had basically given up their ability to uphold their duties when that better offer from Omicare appeared.
Now, I think it's important to mention that not everyone on the court agreed with this decision. There were some dissenting opinions, right? What were the main points of disagreement?
Yeah, so Chief Justice Veazey and Justice Steele, they dissented. And basically, their main concern was that this ruling could potentially destabilize the whole M&A world. They argued that by making it so hard to include deal protections, it would be much harder for companies, especially those in trouble financially, to find buyers in the first place. You know, why would a buyer want to make a deal if they think the board can just walk away later if something better comes along?
So their concern was more about the practical side of things, making sure that deals can actually happen.
Yeah, exactly. They basically felt like the NCS board had acted reasonably given their situation. You know, at the time they made the deal with Genesis, that was the only option on the table. They argued that locking in that deal, even with those protections, was the best way to protect the company and the shareholders. They were worried that this ruling would scare off potential buyers and make it harder for companies to get the help they need.
Now, let's get a little more technical for a second. I know that the court used something called the Unicall standard to evaluate this case. Can you explain what that is and how it was applied here?
So the Unicall standard basically kicks in when a board of directors takes steps to defend against a takeover or a merger. It means that they're going to be under more scrutiny than usual. The court will really look closely at what they did to make sure they weren't just trying to protect themselves or their own interests. There's a two-part test. First, the board has to show that they had a good reason to believe there was a threat to the company. Second, they have to show that the steps they took to protect the company were reasonable and proportionate to the threat.
And how did the NCS board do under this Unicall test?
Well, the court actually said they failed both parts of the test. They acknowledged that NCS's financial situation was a problem, but they said that those deal protections were way over the top. Instead of being a shield to protect a good deal, the court saw them as more of a weapon to eliminate any competition, especially from Omicare. They basically said that the NCS board had given up all their power to even consider a better offer, and that was just too extreme.
There's this really powerful quote from Justice Holland in the majority opinion. He wrote, "The stockholders are entitled to rely on the board to discharge its fiduciary duties at all times." What did he mean by that, and how did the court feel the NCS board had messed up in this regard?
That quote really sums up the whole case.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the court was saying that the NCS board, by agreeing to those super strict deal protections, had stopped doing their job of protecting the shareholders. They had made it a done deal no matter what, and that meant the shareholders couldn't count on them to always look out for their best interests.
So looking back now, what has been the lasting impact of the Omicare decision? How has this case changed the world of M&A?
Well, the most obvious impact is that almost every merger agreement for a public company now includes a fiduciary out clause. After Omicare, lawyers and boards realized how seriously the Delaware courts took this issue. It's become pretty much standard practice to make sure the board has the ability to consider better offers.
So that's a pretty concrete change, but it also seems like Omicare created kind of a dilemma, right? I mean, if a buyer knows that the board can just walk away from the deal later, they might not be so eager to make a deal in the first place.
Oh, definitely. Omicare created this tension between protecting shareholders and making sure the deals can actually happen. You know, on the one hand, you want the board to always be able to do what's best for the shareholders, which might mean taking a better offer. But on the other hand, buyers want some certainty that the deal they're making will actually go through. So it's a tough balance, and it's something that the courts are still figuring out.
All right, so to wrap this all up, what's the main takeaway from Omnicare for our listeners, especially those who are in law school and just starting to learn about corporate law?
I'd say the biggest lesson is that you always have to balance the technicalities of the deal with the board's responsibilities to the shareholders. Deal protections are fine, but they can't be so restrictive that they stop the board from doing their job. The courts, especially in Delaware, have made it very clear that they won't tolerate deals that basically lock the board into a decision no matter what. So when you're dealing with M&A, you always have to keep in mind that the board has a duty to act in the best interests of the shareholders, and they can't just sign that away.
Awesome. So as we wrap up today's deep dive, here's a question for everyone out there to ponder. We've talked about how Omnicare led to these fiduciary out clauses becoming pretty standard in M&A deals, but what other effects has this case had on how mergers and acquisitions actually play out? How has it changed the way these deals are negotiated and structured? And bigger picture, has Omnicare really found the sweet spot between protecting shareholders and making sure that deals can happen smoothly? I mean, these are the kinds of questions that are still being debated and litigated, and they're definitely something to keep thinking about as you continue to learn about this area of the law. Thanks for tuning in.